past the Moaning Desert. James Talbor crossed the desert in a rage, his two six guns at his hips. He had traveled far into Indian country to gather mature peyote cactus for some snake oil medicine his family sold. When he returned, coming down from a delirious three-day high, he found his home ramshacked, and the nude, violated body of his wife, shot twice in the head, once in the pussy. From there, his life became a dark tunnel vision. He filled the water bags. All the food had been stolen. So he stashed the peyote, all but about 30 choice bits that he put into his saddle. He estimated all this happened about 12 hours ago, and he found tracks leading into the Moaning Wind Desert. He hadn't slept in a day and had not bathed in 4 or 5, but he went straight on with teeth grinding, his mind concentrating only on the vicious revenge and pushing away the pain and torment inside. Along the way, he passed a trapper he knew named Kevin Blask. He traded 4 peyote buttons for a 5th of some nasty whiskey. He sipped at it relentlessly as he rode for 3 hours and got too drunk and tired to go on. He tied the horse to an overturned, burnt-out wagon and clumsily unrolled his sleeping bag. There was a haunting quality about the wind in this desert. It had once been a popular trade route because hostile Indians, long since wiped out, wouldn't go there believing that it was an evil place. A gnawing fear chewed on Talbor's mind as he finally fell into a sour, fitful sleep. His dreams all scattered, glitter dissolving mostly when he woke up. He only remembered shooting his gun a lot and firing about 30 rounds from each of his 6-shot guns. He untied his horse, Pumice, and they went on. He was no longer sure about the tracks he was trying to follow, but he was sure that almost anyone traveling through here would be going to Oskegia. That was a wild town. Lots of visitors end up dead or in jail. The saloons never close, and other herbal treats are available too. He'd sold lots of snake oil there before, but he made some enemies there too, and he seldom ventured there, especially not alone. Now he rode right in. He was in a sinister, foul mood. He got a room at the Wounded General and stashed his saddle there. He hated leaving his horse unguarded even for 15 minutes here. He went to the public baths and paid $3 for a cheap tub. The cheap tubs cost $1.50 less, but there's no privacy screen. He stripped naked in front of the other cheap bathers while passing along the private baths. 3 others were in public baths, a middle-aged mother with a couple of small kids that splashed about wildly screaming in the tub beside his. To his left, an old man looked like he was either sleeping or had passed into a happier realm. And of course, Millie, a 6-foot buff drag queen, from the only gay saloon in town tough enough not to be burned down by the high-moral town folk. Millie stared and licked his lips. And naked, James Talbor did not know which way to turn, buttocks towards the leering giant or genitals to arouse less reaction from a scary man.
Nice stuff, cowboy, said Millie,
as an embarrassed Talbor got into the tub to hide his goodies. No one he knew or desired around just now. the water was actually kind of warm. He scrubbed himself about, watched as people crossed over and back to the private baths where most of the town people went, although only twice a week.
Soap?
Came a voice from behind him. Excuse me. Excuse me, James said, broken from his revelry. He turned to see the soap and shampoo girl, a chubby girl with a cute smile she was, dressed in a modest one-piece swimsuit with a dolphin pattern.
Soap? Shampoo?
She had the tray with her, with various soaps and five bottles of shampoo. Hey, I was riding through the desert with my shirt off, and I got sunburned. Look at my belly, where it's got worst. What soap do you recommend for that? Her eyes, a soft, hazy purple, flickered over his nude body, and yes, his semi-flaccid penis.
Here is some chamomile. It should be good for your skin.
She handed him a bar of yellow cracked soap and overbalanced her tray. Before she could right the tray, it spilled the shampoo bottles into James' tub and splashed in the water about him.
Oh, sorry,
she said, blushing with embarrassment as she reached to recover the bottles, and James' penis began to erect even before she brushed her arm along its tip. Seeing his rising arousal, she quickly fished out the last bottle with a giggle and departed. A wide grin spread across James' face as his cock reached a full, quavering erection. He glanced about and noticed Millie was still staring intently at him. Need any hard-to-reach spots scrubbed, honey? Millie volunteered. No thanks. Still, Millie stared and made stirring sounds in the water. Everybody was afraid of Millie after he had killed those three skinhead cowboys that had attacked him on the street. They had shot him twice, then it was all over. One with a broken neck from a devastating left hook. One from being grabbed and driven face first into a building, brains cascading down the wall. And a third, Millie strangled to death. The thought of death and all that brought back thoughts of his murdered wife. He choked back tears as he told Millie what had happened. If you need help, cowboy, I'll fight with you if you let me give you a blowjob. James' eyes widened in shock. At least he'd be sucking on me rather than some other thing going on, but ugh. His erection had finally melted away now. He acted like he was napping, hoping Millie would move on and he could leave the bath without being oogled. No such luck. 45 minutes later and Millie showed no signs of leaving. James got out of the tub, trying not to think about it. He barely noticed the other townsfolk coming and going, some checking him out while he was distracted. He got up, he toweled off more or less, and grabbed the spare outfit he kept in his saddle. His skin burned with the heat of the staring eyes, and suddenly he just wanted to be alone. He departed without looking back, and he went to the Blue Baboon Saloon and bought a bottle of beer and two opium cookies. He ate the cookies as he walked back to his room. He saw Gary Trist, a personal enemy of his, walking with a plump Asian girl. They exchanged hostile stares, but no more. But now, who knows if he was going to be safe at any time, because before there was at least the illusion of safety. Back inside, he stretched himself out on the bed. The opium was taking effect, and he twitched his foot slowly to keep awake as he dissolved into dreams and nice, warm feelings. He mainly visualized his lost wife and the things they could have done together. The opium made the pain recede into a distant throb, and the whiskey should knock that back when the time comes. But he may need to be sober soon. His foot slowly stopped twitching, and he fell into ultra-vivid color-swirling dreams and visions lost forever in the vast limbo of consciousness. James woke up a little after midnight. A gnawing hunger bothered him, and he went to the nearest bar. There were three on his street alone. He ordered some lizard cakes and a couple drafts of root beer, alcohol 4%. As he waited for the slop to be slung, he looked about the hazy place. A lot of out-of-towners like him were here. Probably a bunch of cowpokes with a few days off and a month's pay to blow in this sin town. Several underage young men drinking various poisons and acting tough. A scant of females about, most of them looking pretty used up. All in low neck cleavage displaying dresses, and the out-of-towners gawked. His lizard cakes arrived, and the root beer. He began eating and watching the local band pound away at some randy song with sax, string bass, and drum. In walked Charles Flint and Marcus Durning, James's two other foes. They immediately saw him and narrowed their eyes as they approached the bar for a flask of beer. James had smuggled in a single handgun that he had stuffed down his pants to keep his genitals company. Long ago, he had prevented them from raping a 16-year-old blind girl, and they hated him ever since. He had flown into a primal rage and beat all three of them down and escaped with the girl out of town. The girl had been so grateful that she gave him a blowjob in the desert. That was the best blowjob he'd ever had. He missed that girl. The thought of her made his erection press against his gun. James wolfed down the last bite of lizard cake and swigged the rest of the root beer. At the bar, Flint and Durning exchanged sleazy looks with the bartender and laughed, dirty, phlegmy laughs. How nice it would be to end these fuckers' lives right here. But then he would have to leave town without knowing who had killed, and worse, his wife. It may well be these bastards, though. The band took a break and hit the bar, drinking shot after shot of some purple foaming drink. The sullen desire to pull his gun and attack was stronger now, as the two bastards laughed and bragged louder than anybody else in the room, like frightened dogs barking in the night. Never turn your back on a frightened dog, though, and two dogs can be trouble. James got up, leaving a couple copper stones as a tip. He left the bar without looking back. From behind him, ugly laughter echoed. Given half a chance, he would kill these men before he left town. But first things first. The next drinking establishment was called Pike's Place. It offered cheap beer and dancing girls. The place was interesting. Loud music from a trio of string bass players, and a former slave escaped from the South, wailing out some broken soul music from a piano. The dancing girls were in cages to protect them from the gropey, happy patrons. The girls were topless, wearing leather pants with fringes that shook with their hips. A dapper man in a top hat and lingering scent of opium was dealing out tarot cards in a strange pattern James had never seen before. He moved closer to check it out. People were crowding around the man. He was dealing out cards upside down to four seated men, four cards each. Each of you flip over one card, the man told them in in a slow, calm voice that made James feel sleepy. The first seated man flipped his card over. The Ace of Dreams. The others started flipping their cards, but the man said, "Don't bother. Ace of Dreams takes all in this context. The girl will be yours and worship you as a god." The first man smiled broadly, an expanse of joy, and the others looked somewhat like someone had stepped on their graves. All left the table without a word. A dancer sat down, must have been on break, because she had her top on. She pushed 4 silver coins at the man and asked of her daughter, kidnapped by Indians a year ago and still missing. The man shuffled the deck, and James realized he had never seen such a thick deck before. There must be over 200 cards. He flipped over the 7 of Dreams. Good news. She is alive and well, and very rich, as the princess of 4 tribes. Their medicine men had dreams of her. And now, she's going to make these people prosper. You need to go west to the Grinsalk Hills and find her, and be welcomed by her new people. James pulled out his peyote buttons and put them on the table in front of the tarot man. The tarot man's eyes widened, glittering focus on the cactus bits, before he asked, "What do you want to know?" "Someone killed my wife and came here afterwards. I want to know who, and I want to kill them." "Sit down." Tarot man's began shuffling the deck. "Flip over the card where they killed her at," intoned Tarot Man. James flipped a card over. On the head where the bullets had hit, it was the King of Guns reversed. "A very powerful man that you cannot take out on your own." "And now the other card," said Tarot Man with an obvious fascinated intensity. James flipped over the card between the deck, stick person's legs, and it was a 3 of pipes. There were 2 men involved. "The lesser man you already know. The greater man will come and try to hire you without realizing who you are." "Thank you," James said as he stood up from the table. "Wait. Cut the deck." James did as told. "Now keep that card and don't look at it until after you've met the greater man. You will need it." James scooped up the card and stashed it in his shirt pocket. Tarot Man began chewing the peyote and drinking copious amounts of tomato beer to wash it down with. James ordered a couple pitchers of house beer, a nasty, soapy tasting concoction that went to the head fast, and must have been laced with something. He went outside. It was now early morning, the sun just beginning to peek up over the hills. He didn't go far before running into Flint and Durning. They were leaving their saloons as well, and very drunk.
"Hey asshole, we're gonna kick your fucking teeth in,"
said Flint through barred teeth.
"Yeah, and piss on you when you're down," added Durning.
James reached into his pants and tugged out the gun. The two were on him by then, and pushing him down, crashing into cans and piles of rubbish. With a wild, straining swing, James drove the pistol into Durning's fat face with a sick crunch. The bastard fell back, and Flint grabbed the gun. James kicked the man several times as they rolled about the ground. Durning held his gushing nose with one hand and fumbled out a Bowie knife with 4 notches on it, one for each man he claims to have killed. James wrenched the gun free and pistol-whipped Flint upside the head with 3 devastating blows. He then fired the gun twice into Durning's chest and pumped around into Flint as he lay moaning on the ground. Durning was down, and a pool of blood spread around him. Flint was curled up in the fetal position, bleeding bad and semi-conscious. One shot in each's head ended their lives with loud booms. Too bad Durning had ruined that Bowie knife with at least two false kills notched into it. Now it was worthless. It probably wouldn't even cut through rotten leather. It was then that James realized there was somebody standing in the shadows watching him. Other people were rounding the corner to see what the gunplay was all about, including a couple staggeringly drunk lawmen with drawn rifles. Some of the other people had guns too.
"Drop your gun!"
barked the law as he aimed his gun at James's torso. James dropped the gun. The earlier watcher stepped out of the shadows. "I saw the whole thing, officers. This man acted in self-defense," said the stranger. And he seemed to be a man of importance because the lawmen lowered their guns and told James he may pick his back up as long as he puts it away. James picked it up and crotch-packed the gun. They dragged the bodies off, and the stranger said, "You look like you could use a drink and or a smoke." "Yes, I think I do," James agreed, already suspecting that this is the man the tarot cards spoke of. "Come on over to my house. I'm sure we can find something to relax your nerves." James followed the man, a tall man obviously rich from his expensive outfit, mostly black leather and silver buttons. "My name is Mike Thomas," James lied, extending a hand. Inside the house, Hieronymus rolled a series of joints and handed James a bottle of whiskey. It was trendy in those days to try to out-party people to impress them, and Hieronymus was doing his part. A long, dreamlike morning sinking deeper and deeper into the comfy couches, the two smoked and drank and talked. Hieronymus said he was a thief and an adventurer who plunders like a pirate and leaves rich with lots of money to get laid with. His secret, he says, is never plunder too close to home. He and his henchmen go out of town to rape, loot, and kill. James listened to all this with a growing hatred seething inside. "And who is your partner? Must be a ruthless motherfucker." "Yes. And if you're interested in a little adventure, you can meet him tomorrow night when we ride the wild ride. I think somebody as vicious as you would be a good add-on to my gang. And we play by our own rules and do whatever we please."
"Sounds fun. I'll meet you tomorrow night then. But for now, I think I'll go outside and puke. I'm not feeling well."
"Good night, then." Hieronymus beamed, glad to have so easily outpartied his guest. In fact, Hieronymus looked hardly half-fazed by all the booze and smoke, just a little more mellow and gloating. James left the house and walked back to his room at the Wounded G. He wasn't really going to puke. That was just a ploy to get him out of there. Before he attacked the man, the card said he could not beat on his own. He jammed a chair under the door and pushed the bed away from the window before falling asleep fully clothed with his gun resting on his chest. Somewhere in the morning, he started dreaming. In his dream, he was walking naked through the desert. The sun throbbing through his head and his flesh turning red, he finds his wife's finger with the wedding ring missing. The finger has brilliant black nail polish and is sticking out of the sand. He picks it up, and it's warm in his hand, seeming to pulse with life. He knows that if he could just find all the parts, he can bring her back. He walks on in this dream. The sun is purple-red and looks sick. He picks up an elbow that he finds half-buried a little further on. He comes to a stream. A nipple is floating down it. He scoops it up to add to his growing collection. Slowly his arms fill up with pieces of his wife till he comes to the pussy. It is high up a cliff that is sheer, a straight rise of 90 feet with no handholds.
Help me!
His wife's voice chants from the too high pussy that he cannot climb to. James woke in a cold sweat. On top of that, he always felt paranoid sleeping in these Fleabag inns, thinking the owner will rob him in his sleep. He got out of the nasty, unclean bed and practiced his quick draw in total darkness. As James Talbert practiced drawing his knife and returning it blindly, yet he did it with extreme speed and accuracy. He lived with his gun, and it was now all he had left. He heard a stealthy key enter the lock on the other side of his door. He pulled out his gun, aimed for the sound, and crouched down, waiting. The door stealthily opened. A couple of footsteps followed. James fired three times into the darkness and heard a body fall to the floor. By the flashes of gunfire, James could tell it was one large man, and he was sure the man was dead or dying. A low moan sounded from the doorway. Frightened voices sounded down the hall. James ignited his lantern and saw it was Millie. The man was coughing up ropes of blood, and he had three bullet holes in his torso.
I wanted to be close to you,
Merle gurgled.
I brought you four magic bullets. They're in my handbag.
I guess that blowjob will never happen. Magic bullets? James asked.
Blessed by a high-level wizard, they always hit their target.
Millie sputtered and died. James picked up the bullets and loaded his gun with them. He grabbed his stuff and hurried out before anyone would have the courage to investigate. He went out the window, walked across the noisy, creaking roof, found a safe place to jump down, gun still in hand. The night was chilly, a fresh breeze wafting down the alley. James decided to lay low for a while. He walked out of town, pondering the magic bullets he had. Heard many stories of such things. Normally, it was said that a shaman had blessed the bullets during a complex ritual, and the gods would guide the bullet to its path. People generally thought the bullets never miss, but in one more obscure version, it meant the bullet went where it should go. Sometimes back into the brains of the one who fired the trigger. Others spoke of exploding bullets that could burst a buffalo like a watermelon splatters from a shotgun blast. Then some have said the bullets are a deadly poison. It kills within 5 minutes, even if you're only winged. Whatever they did, James believed. He grinned his bitter belief as he walked on alone. The four magic bullets were the first in his gun. He had one normal one in the chamber ready to go from earlier and two normal ones behind the magic bullets. Was Millie's giving him the bullets the help the tarot man had mentioned? Or did James kill the only help he would have? His plan? Wait until dark and meet with H. Hunger gnawed at Talbert, and he happened to scare up a jackrabbit. He drew his gun and fired a chambered round, missing the small animal. He didn't dare fire any of the magic bullets at such a target, so he holstered his gun. He watched as his lunch dashed away. The day passed all long and hungry and uneventful.
The fateful night slowly wound its way round. And James headed for Hieronymus Wilkes' place. James walked there with his heart pounding in his chest. When a man has lost everything he feels is important, there is only revenge. This kept him going. Before James had got there, Hieronymus Wilkes stepped out of the shadows with his flunky, a man James couldn't see yet.
"Well, hey, you're early," said Hieronymus.
The person behind him stepped into the light. It was his hated enemy, Gary Trist.
"Hey, kill him, boss. He ain't no outlaw. We killed his wife," Gary said.
James Talbert already had his gun drawn. He squeezed off rounds as the other two drew. Wilkes drew his sidearm incredibly fast and was firing as well. The only thought in James's mind was to put three in Wilkes and swivel and fire one into Trist. The rest was reflexes. James saw the side of Wilkes' head explode in a red gush before the bullet punched him in the gut, knocking him backwards. He fired all the magic bullets on his way down, and all struck their marks. Wilkes and Trist fell to the ground, spilling vital fluids. James saw that they were both dead. A place that was swallowing him up as well. He just laughed and spit up blood as the world faded.
The end.